this sober mind, intoxicated tongue, with that smooth talk, hot like the sun. Hitting the interviews, yeah, we doing a thing, cause our guests keep it lit straight on the scene. Whether it's stories, hobbies, or just the job of life, best believe we spark it off and do it right. So stay tuned, cause we about to take flight, take it a new height, yeah, this that podcast, where we having a blast and getting it done, cause you are now in the mix.
Welcome to the Sober Mind Intoxicated Tongue podcast, or SMIT for short, a podcast where Ricardo interviews people from all walks of life, diverse people with different careers and different hobbies, all with fascinating stories to share. You can find all of our episodes wherever you listen to your podcasts, or go to smitpodcast.com to find our most recent episodes. You can also follow us on Facebook and Instagram at SMIT Podcast. And now, please welcome your host, Ricardo.
All right. Thank you, everyone, for joining me. The name is Ricardo, and you are listening to the Sober Mind Intoxicated Tongue podcast. On today's episode, we have a very special guest. After getting weight loss surgery and losing 160 pounds and maintaining it, Chandra is here to tell us all about her weight loss journey. Thank you, Chandra, for being here tonight with us.
Thank you so much for having me. I super appreciate the opportunity to be here with you today.
So let's start from the beginning, from your story. Like, how you said you, so based on the information that I got from you, you got weight loss surgery and mm-hmm. you lost 160 pounds and maintained it. Obviously, you call it a success story, which I could definitely tell because we are doing the Zoom thing and I can definitely tell. But before we get into that, leading up to your surgery, how can you just tell us a little bit how you got to that stage, I guess?
Absolutely. So it all started when my mom met my dad. No, I'm just kidding. So
we can go as far back as you want.
Right. We can go back way far. So I am from South Texas. And, you know, Texas is known for good eats and bigger is better and all this. Everything like that. My mom was a single mom. She was a nurse. So she led a very busy schedule. And I was a normal size like child. And I say normal because like it's all fluctual. Whatever your doctor says is good for you is what's actually true. But I was an average size child until probably like fourth grade. So my mom took us out to eat and portion sizes are big. And I would just eat all my food. We didn't really believe in leftovers. When she took me to a buffet, I ate my worth, you know, like
exactly.
I got the most bang for my buck at those buffet lines.
Are you sure not talking about me, Ethan?
No, not talking about you. Talking about me.
Oh, okay.
Here.
Okay.
So, and a lot of people, you know, what hits is what sticks with it. But
right.
I lost my full trigger at a very young age. Like I remember being at a restaurant and like I hadn't, like at a Mexican restaurant, I was very particular. I would eat all of my foods separately. Like I didn't mind if they touched, but I would eat them separately. And then like at the end, I would like mix all the sauce and everything and then scoop it up with chips and eat it. And I was sad, like cried when the lady took away the the leftovers before I had scooped it up with chips. And that's that's ridiculous. Right. Like I was a child, I shouldn't have been eating those portions. But when you eat like that, obviously like you're gonna gain some weight. So I started showing some weight gain, fourth, fifth grade. And then I got into middle school and I actually played volleyball. So I love volleyball. Mm-hmm. I'm really tall. And so I was really good at it. And our team was really great back in the day. And so because I was being active, I was able to eat those calories and it didn't continue to up the numbers on the scale. Mm-hmm. And then I got into a car accident. And so that took out my ability to play volleyball. And so the scale like started creeping back up. So I remember in high school when everybody was shopping at, I don't even remember like any of the stores that weren't like Abercrombie or American Eagle or things like that. I was shopping at like Catherine's and Avenue and Lane Bryant. And I was worried that they weren't going to have sizes to fit me. Right. So like I was in a 22, 24 sometimes 26, 28 in high school. And then I moved out of small town Victoria, Texas, to San Antonio, big city, bright lights. There were less people that were judging of my size. And I was like single and on my own. So I was, you know, living the ramen life and drinking some calories and like doing the things that, you know, normal 20 something people do. So again, there was like a little bit of a stall for my weight gain, but not a whole lot. And then I met my ex-husband and I moved up here to Maryland and I wanted to be under 300 pounds to fit into a wedding dress that was not like a size 20.
Right.
And so I went, I took some diet pills and my doctor like, you know, had me do a diet and I got under 300 pounds. I was in a size 18 wedding dress. And then I was married and I didn't have that goal to work towards anymore.
Right.
So now, I very quickly, oh, go ahead.
Now before, after high school, like how big were you? If you don't mind me, I know it's kind of an odd question asking you, but, was it a significant amount of weight? Like right after high school, after you stopped doing all the extracurricular activities, like volleyball, like you said.
Yeah, 100%. So, I'm trying to think. I didn't pay attention to the scale as much as I should have. I didn't take as many before pictures as I should have. So like based on like my current weight, which is around 230, 235, and I'm in like a size 14, I would assume that I was probably like pushing 280, 300.
Okay.
Because of the sizing that I was in. So I knew that I was like in a 22, 24 solid, you know what I mean? And so on a 6'2 frame, that's probably around 280, 300.
Okay.
Yeah.
So was that weight, is that from the time that you graduated high school to the time that you got married or you try to lose weight for that wedding dress? Was that how long of a stretch was that? And it was a continuous weight gain from when you graduated to when you started getting, when you got engaged pretty much?
Yeah, 100%. So that time frame was probably about 5 years from the time that I got engaged. And then from engagement to wedding was August to March. And so September, October, November, December, January, February, March. So like 8 months. Mm-hmm. So I was on a diet for like 8 months and I was really watching what I was trying to eat. And I mean, obviously in the meantime, like, it's pretty factual that overweight people are not generally happy with how they look, happy with how they feel. And so in that amount of time, obviously I had tried Slim Fast. I had tried just salads. Mm-hmm. I had tried, you know, eating better and doing better. Even when I was in high school, like my mom took me to a weight loss surgeon for a consult when I was in high school in Texas. And they were like, no way, she's under 18. We're not touching this, you know? So, like off and on dieting, off and on yo-yo, off and on whether I feel okay with it or not. And being the fat funny chick and being the party trick and being the, you know, like you kind of just go through these phases. So in 2008, I was married at 300 and some odd pounds. I quickly gained that 20 pounds that I had, you know, worked to get off back. And then I got pregnant with my first son and I gained 20 pounds with that pregnancy. And I lost it like right after because he was a giant baby and water weight exists. And then fast forward a couple years, I had gained 50 pounds because I was a working new mom trying to juggle all the things. And I was 370 at the start of my next pregnancy. And I gained the 20 pounds and I'm like, you know what? 390 is not so bad. It's not 400. I used that a lot. Yeah. As long as it's not 350, I'm okay. As long as it's not 360, I'm okay. You know, like,
as long as you're not in the next tier, pretty much.
Yeah. As long as you're not. And once you're in the next tier, it is okay because that's where you are. So as long as you're not in the next tier, but, at the end of my pregnancy with my daughter, I was 390 pounds. And that 20 pounds of pregnancy weight did not come back off. And so my wake up call was about 6 months later at Christmas, because I've got June babies, both of their birthdays are in June. So I can very easily time my years by whether birthdays are coming up or Christmas is coming up. So I was sitting on the floor with the kids, opening presents and playing with toys and things like that. And I needed to get up and I couldn't because my legs had fallen asleep and I was basically stuck on our dining room floor.
Oh, wow.
So I had to like army crawl myself to the couch and like slowly let circulation regain or restore, whatever word you want to use. And then once that happened, I was able to get up and walk around like normal. The problem with that, as a mom, I looked around and I thought, what if one of my kids was in danger and needed me in that moment when I couldn't do anything for them? And I don't know if I can say this, but it scared the shit out of me.
Oh yeah, you could definitely say whatever you
say
feel.
Say the word.
Yeah.
Yeah, it really scared me. So I had a very open, honest conversation with my ex-husband at the time. And I said, listen, I need to do something about this weight. And so I went and had a very open and honest conversation with my PCP and basically was like, all right, put me back on the diet pills. Put me back on the diet. Let me lose the weight again. It'll be no problem. And she's like, well, actually, it will be a problem because this is a, you know, you have proven that you're not going to be long-term success with this. And so they referred me to the weight loss center that is attached with our like medical facilities around here. I don't know how it works in Michigan, but here we have like one big healthcare provider for the area. And like a lot of the offices and things satellites. Yeah.
Very, very similar. I think we got a few of them, like a few bigger people, bigger hospital chains. And then you got your outpatient, you know, little buildings or whatever.
So I went to Meritus Weight Loss Center and a little bit of backstory. My mom had stomach staplings and was unsuccessful. My mom lived and died obese. And so she was never a long-term success. She would get skinny and she would have some healthy habits. And then she would just go back to overeating and not staying active. And so I did not want to be, who wants to be like their parents? I don't know anybody, but I did not want to be like my mom. And so I was against weight loss surgery. I didn't want it. I didn't want to go through it. I didn't want to, you know, roll that tape.
Do you think
I went.
Do you think that a lot of your weight gain was attributed to your mom's poor health habits as well?
Yes, 100%. And I think that I can't blame it all on my mom. Obviously, once I left her house, I made my own decisions and things like that. But the foundations that she had laid in my life with overeating and not being active were the foundations and the building blocks that carried me through further on. Even when I knew better, it was harder to do better because of those foundational pieces.
Okay.
So
ultimately you're at the point where you don't want to get the surgery. That's totally against your quote unquote religion in a sense.
100% against it. No bones. It was a no bones day on weight loss surgery.
so why did you choose ultimately the weight loss surgery over the traditional diet and exercise?
So I had a very wise weight loss surgery team that said, you know what, let's say you don't want to do it. And honestly, they're not even like a weight loss surgery clinic. They're a weight loss center. Mm-hmm. So they were like, all right, let's say you don't get weight loss surgery. How about we go through the motions of getting you approved for weight loss surgery while you meet with our nutritionists, while you try to implement some exercises and, you know, update your lifestyle, while you try to make some better choices. And then that way, if at the end of whatever your insurance says is your approval time, if you are approved and you want to, you're not any farther away from getting the weight loss surgery than you are today. Right, you're actually closer to it.
Right.
And so I basically went through the motions of checking the boxes for an insurance approval, which at the time for me was not terrible. Like some people have to lose a certain percentage of their body weight. Some people have to meet with a nutritionist for like over a year. Some people have to have a ton of different sign-offs and things like that. For me, it was 6 months of meeting with a nutritionist, one psych eval, and then some like medical tests to make sure like my gallbladder was okay, my liver wasn't oversized.
Right.
All of these different things.
But you didn't have to. You didn't have to lose a certain amount of weight. Because I know
I did not.
Okay. Because I see a lot of people. A lot of people who had the weight loss surgery that I don't know them personally, but I know.
Right.
They're YouTubers or whatever. They say that one of the reasons that they can say that weight loss surgery is not a easy way out is because they do have to put in the work to actually lose
right.
a significant amount of weight before you even are eligible to actually receive that weight loss surgery.
Mm-hmm. 100%. And so it's all up to your insurance company. Okay. And I wish that there was like a standardized guideline, but I guess it is nice in the fact that, you know, your doctors are overseeing this and your doctors know the insurance requirements and your doctors would know how to help circumnavigate anything. So let's say that there was a medical condition preventing someone from losing that weight. The doctor could write a letter to the insurance company and be like, listen, they're not going to lose this weight because XYZ. Mm-hmm. Can we skip this piece of the approval process? Now, I'm not saying that's facts. I'm not saying everybody say, oh, Chandra said this is what you can do and do it. But your doctors know, your doctors are working with you. And I think that's one of the big things why insurance companies have these approval processes in place is so that you just don't go into this lightheartedly.
Right.
Because one of the biggest attributing factors for my success is I treated this surgery not as the fix, not as a band-aid. I treated this surgery as a tool in my toolbox right. of things that I needed to do to implement my lifestyle change. So my surgery was really the portion control and healthy eating tool that I needed in order to kickstart some weight loss to help like get the ball rolling. Like, what's in motion stays in motion. What is stagnant stays stagnant.
Right.
And that's a rule of physics. Because it's true.
So leading up to, let's just say a month before you actually took the, actually got the surgery itself.
Mm-hmm.
Talk us a little bit of what went down like the week before the weeks leading up to, the surgery and during the surgery, how it went.
So the night before surgery, my ex-husband and I went and got Buffalo Wild Wings. Because after you have surgery, you're not going to be able to eat like regular food and they discouraged like spicy food because like everything was going to be tender still
right.
and you can't push yourself. So like, I know that that's what I was doing the night before surgery was I was having Buffalo Wild Wings. Leading up to surgery, I was very, calm and assured. And, I don't know, you know, if you're a man of faith, but I am a woman of faith. And so like I had a church congregation praying with me over this decision. I had, you know, my therapist was helping me to grasp this. I had, you know, friends and family members and a phenomenal support team that like, if at all I was getting upset or anxious, they were there to calm me down. And honestly, like I was so excited because on the flip side of not wanting to be like my mom, I remember being mortified when my mom would come to my volleyball games. I remember hating my mom driving up in her Beetle, being over 300 pounds herself, looking ridiculous in the clown car.
Right.
You know, I didn't want to be that mom. And really? My kids were still young enough that they would have the benefit of having a healthy, active mom that could go out and play with them and things like that. So the insurance process was pretty simple. The doctor's office just walked me through it and did all of the checks and boxes themselves. I actually got approved for surgery in 2012, but my ex-husband and I didn't have like the copay basically. Okay. So because we hadn't met our deductible yet that year, so it was going to be pretty expensive. And then in 2013, tax time was going to be surgery time.
Okay.
And then I had to get reapproved. So there some nerves on that, but that was a very simple process. They just resubmitted all of my paperwork and the insurance got approved. So, One little side story. I went on missions trip in 2013, which was in March. So about 3 months before my surgery. So I'm definitely at my heaviest, close to 400 pounds, like 399.5 was my official weigh-in.
Oh my God.
So yeah, it was hefty. So I was in Nicaragua. Okay. I had to use a seatbelt extender for the plane ride. I had to like take breaks as much as possible because like Nicaragua is a much higher elevation. And on one of the like excursion days, because usually when you go on a missions trip, you also get to do like something fun.
Right.
So there's this volcano that it's called Mambacho, and around like the ring of the volcano is like a hiking trail. And so you can actually go and hike at the top of this volcano and see really cool stuff. So we're going on this hike at 399.5 pounds and I'm done. Like I have met my limit. There's no way. So like, there's this like overlook that everybody's talking about and they want to like walk off the main trail and go to this overlook. And I can't, I completely refused because I could not bear the thought of like passing out in Nicaragua at the top of a volcano from not being able to complete it. Oh my. So we finish the hike. I didn't see the beautiful sight and things like that. And what's funny is a year later, so not even at my thinnest, I went back, didn't have to use a seatbelt extender, was able to do so much for so many people because I had the energy and capacity to do so. And we went on that hike again and I was able to complete it no problem. And what was so frustrating to me was I'm trying to think of like a thing. So like on a regular city block, the long part of the block, okay? Not the short part of the block, but the long part of the block. That was the distance from where I stopped and stayed to the overlook.
Oh, wow.
So not even a quarter mile, like super, a very short distance.
Yeah, yeah.
And it kills me that I, A, didn't do it because I was just so stubborn, and B, none of the tour guides, none of the people that had seen it before came alongside me and said, Chandra, it's less than a city block away. Mm. Why don't we take a minute? Why don't we break and let's go? And so I think I say that to encourage people to like find the right support system.
Okay, yeah, for sure.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Because if you've got somebody that's telling you, you know what, take a break. You don't need to push. It's fine. You've met your limit. I get it. But then if you have somebody that like gives you the full amount of information and allows you to make that decision, like that's a good thing to have in your life.
Do you think that in that situation, people can be a little too soft, I guess, on people mm-hmm. that are a little bit heavier that they don't want to, I mean, literally push them to
actually, they don't want
to
push them.
Yeah. To exert any type of physical, you know, exertion, I guess, in a sense.
Yeah. 100%. I think that I think even if I had been like a kid, somebody would have said, come on, it's not that far. Let's go.
Right.
You know? And it was just one of those things that it didn't happen.
Okay. Well, we're going to take a little quick break. Then I want to hear what the actual surgery involves and what it. I want to hear the nitty gritty of what happens during
all the deets.
Exactly. So we'll be right back and then we'll get back into it.
Perfect.
All right. We are back. So before we went on a break, I asked, I want to know what type of surgery you actually got. And I mean, give us as much description or less description as you want.
Perfect. So there are three different types of weight loss surgery. Lap band is actually kind of minimizing. A lot of people aren't even performing that surgery anymore because it can have complications further down the road. And that has a very low success rate. And when I say success rate, I mean total amount of percentage of excess body fat lost and maintained over the course of XYZ years. I think they look at it at like 1, 5, and 10 years, and that determines the success. So then there is gastric sleeve, and that one's very popular right now, laparoscopically performed. Very minimal recovery time, moderate results as far as success rates go, and less side effects after the fact than gastric bypass patients. Me, I went all or nothing. I wanted gastric bypass because I needed the wake up call. I needed the, this is how we're going to do it from now on, and no excuses. I didn't want a sliding scale of okay again. Like, if I'm getting to this tier, it's okay. I didn't want that. So I chose gastric bypass, and gastric bypass was going to yield the highest amount of results, but also has the highest amount of possible negative side effects post-surgery. So that's another thing that you mentioned about being the easy way out, is it's not. Like, I have to take supplements all day, like from the time that I wake up until the time that I go to bed. I have to watch what I eat. I still, 8 years out, I still, when I feel like I'm overeating or I see that the scale is creeping up again, I go back to measuring my food, like with a cup.
Okay.
Measuring my food. And my body does not absorb nutrients like it used to. I can't just eat whatever I want in smaller portions. That's not the way it works. Okay. So like my body has a physical reaction to high fat. So like anything fried, oh, wow. even sometimes avocados, like things that are healthy fats, mm-hmm. And then high sugar content. And so I wouldn't call myself lactose intolerant. I would just say I am lactose advergent because, milk is made up of fat and sugar. And so like, if I have too much of it, it just, I'm out. Yeah. So, I chose gastric bypass. Okay. And the morning of surgery, I was up and at the hospital by 5:30 in the morning. A very dear friend was at the house watching my kids. I was getting my little non-slip socks on. They gave me like wipes that I had to like wipe down my body for like a clean environment.
Right.
The surgeon came in and kind of prepped, gave me a little pep talk. Hey, I had my coffee, but I'm not shaking. And then I got wheeled down to surgery at 7. They, did the anesthesia, did the count backwards or something. I don't remember. I was asleep for this next portion. So they did my surgery laparoscopically. So I have like very large dot type scars. And then when I woke up from surgery, I was in the worst pain of my life in my chest when they very first brought me out of anesthesia. And what it is they fill that cavity with gas to expand. Oh, wow. And so that they can see what they're doing, which is totally normal and everything like that. But I was like having a panic attack because like, those cartoons where like an anvil crushes somebody, literally felt like there was an anvil sitting in my chest.
Oh my God.
So they just knocked me out for a little while. They let me sleep that off. and then they pulled me back out. So my hospital stay after that was, I think, 2 days, maybe three. And all I could do was like chew ice chips and like very minimal, like anything. I remember they had me like drink this really gross liquid, and basically it's dye so that they can see if any of the sutures have popped.
Oh, okay.
and that everything's still good, basically. Yeah. I got released from surgery, and I had the best, again, it's all about finding the right support group. I had weight loss surgery fairy godmothers. So like before surgery, I had this beautiful woman have coffee with me, and she gave me like little tiny plates and cups and like tiny forks and things.
Yeah.
Because right after surgery, you can only eat like a quarter cup of food, which is the size of an egg. So like your pouch is that big.
Jeez.
And after surgery, you have to follow a specific diet for so long. So like for the first few days, all I was doing was getting clear liquid, and I would take a sip and I would feel nauseated because my pouch was full.
Jeez.
And yeah, it was crazy. So like I was dehydrated. My body was basically starving. I was so exhausted.
You didn't feel hungry, did you? You say you didn't feel hungry, or were you hungry?
I did not feel hungry. Okay. So that was one of the things that I prayed before my surgery, was that the surgery would take care of my full trigger. Like, Lord, let this be the answer to my prayers. I know you didn't answer me when I said, wake me up skinny. So let this one be the one that you answer. Okay. And I will say, like, when I'm eating and I'm eating an appropriate amount of food for my body, I to this day have a full trigger. Like, I can push my plate away when food is still on the plate and be like, you know what? I'm good. I don't need those extra three bites.
Okay.
They'll be there in the leftover container. So, I was home. I made it through clear liquids. And I remember I was really upset, and somebody came and visited me, and they were like, you know what, Chandra, tomorrow is going to be better than today. Tomorrow is going to feel better than today. And so it was just kind of that reminder for, like, hope. And this is my body processing right. and healing that I really needed. And it truly encouraged me. And so I just focused on that day. And they want you to try and continue to get 64 ounces of water in while your stomach is only this big. They want you to try and get 60 grams of protein in while your stomach is this big. And that is, it's impossible. Like, I just don't understand how anybody could try and do that. And so I had somebody else say, you know what, focus on water. Like, you're going to die of dehydration before you're going to die of hunger. Like, your body has plenty of fat stores right now. So I did, I focused on my water, and if I could eat and if I felt hungry, I did it. But then if I didn't get my 60 grams of protein, I didn't sweat it because I was focusing on my water.
Okay.
And so I did that. And then I moved to full liquids, which is like protein shakes. That made it easier to get protein in. Although a lot of protein shakes are disgusting. Like, I specifically made a meme that is like the party girl. I know you've seen her, party girl with like a glitter dress and a glitter background. Oh, yeah. And she's like crying and all of her makeup.
Yeah.
And I literally wrote, tried a new protein shake today. Still tastes disgusting. But, yeah. So once I got done with my full liquids, then I was able to move on to soft foods. So this is like scrambled eggs.
Oh, wow.
Mashed potatoes, tuna, like very like boiled chicken that's mashed up with maybe a little bit of mayonnaise and stuff, like there, because you don't want to be eating a salad and throwing stuff at that brand new surgically enhanced pouch.
Right.
And ripping sutures out left and right. Like, you got to kind of build up to that. And so I was on soft foods, I think, for like 3 weeks.
Jeez.
So cottage cheese, girlfriend was not okay with cottage cheese by the end of that time frame. That's crazy. And then after that, you could move on to like a little more varied textures. But the goal is to always chew your food up to the consistency of applesauce.
Okay.
And I don't know if you've ever sat and gnawed on a piece of meat for a little too long and you're like, it just,
you start thinking about that, how the texture, I don't know. I understand what you're saying. It's kind of weird.
It makes you feel not great. And it makes you choose different foods. Like, if it's my choice, I'm not out buying a steak. If it's my choice, I'm probably going to be getting some chicken and making it some taco meat so that it's easier for me to deal with. And so that was the nitty gritty of my surgery day and the immediate aftermath. And honestly, that first 2 weeks I dropped 27 pounds.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And I didn't think that I had lost that much weight because when you're 400 pounds, dropping 27 pounds doesn't really look like much.
Right. Now, going back to the actual surgery itself, do you, knowing how hard it was first post surgery, were there a lot of times where you're like, man, this, I shouldn't have done this, and did you ever regret it post surgery at all?
Never once.
Okay.
I think I maybe asked myself like, what have I done, but like, I have never once regretted having the surgery. And the only regret that I have is not having it done sooner.
Okay.
Because of the lifestyle that I lead, the confidence that I have, the ability that like my son can say, hey, mom, you want to race? And I'm like, yeah, let's go. Right. You know, like that to me is like priceless.
Right.
And so I'm all about it. And fast forward. So like, and I still struggle with weight. Like this is not something, and I still struggle with, I wouldn't say food addiction. I'm not addicted to food. I love food and I have favorite foods and I really love to like share food with people. Like I'm a hospitality. Somebody in my family was an Italian grandmother. Cause if you're coming to my house, I'm feeding you. You know what I mean?
Right.
But like, I'm not addicted to it. I don't need it. I will sit and eat and eat and eat because I'm bored.
Right.
I will, because I'm sad, order a pizza. I don't know why this is still ingrained in my head, but if anything in my world is wrong, we're ordering pizza.
Right.
And then
it's a comfort food.
And right. It's comfort. And so it's one of those things that along the way, you still have to face what those triggers are, mm-hmm. and you have to replace what those comforts are from the food. You know what I mean? Right. So like now if I'm feeling sad, I might go walk. I might, you know, like right. if I am craving a sweet, like I don't believe in replacing your cravings. Like if you're craving a brownie, eat a brownie.
Okay.
Like, but don't eat a pan full of brownies.
Right.
You know what I mean? If you're craving ice cream, say, hey honey, will you split a bowl with me?
Right.
One of those things.
So I guess going back to my question, I guess I can restructure a little bit better.
Sorry.
For me, you did it great. What I'm saying, I thought of the question a little bit more. Okay, so yeah. a different question that I had. Knowing what you know now, do you think, it's not that you regret it, but do you think it would have been easier if you, I had it. Since now you have the ability to actually, to listen to your body, to listen to your, mm-hmm. your, say like, hey, I don't have to do this. Why? Not that I'm judging. Why couldn't you do that before the surgery, I guess, in a sense?
Yeah. I think I wasn't ready.
Okay.
I think that there's a big part in lifestyle change, any type of lifestyle change,
yeah.
Addiction. If you cheat on your spouse, if you, are in a terrible job, if you are in a bad relationship, you allow a certain amount, mm-hmm. you know, your body allows, and it's kind of like back to that thing, like you're okay until you're not okay.
Right.
Like it's, and so I think that I hadn't had the wake up call. I hadn't hit the rock bottom. I hadn't gotten to the point basically where my kids' lives depended on it. Mm-hmm. You know, like for me, they were my why for a long time. And I will say my why has changed. Okay. My original why was my kids and keeping them safe. But my why now is me.
Right.
Like I'm worth continuing my health journey and doing that. And it's okay if your why changes.
Right.
You know, you can have a catalyst why.
Right.
And then once you're on track and years happen, I've literally, there's a lifetime between 8 years between now and when I had surgery. I've been separated and divorced. I was in another relationship. I'm remarried. I've had another baby. So I've gained more pregnancy weight and lost it, you know? So like it's one of those things though, that you have to have your wake up call.
Right.
You have to be ready. And even people that have wake up calls aren't ready for it sometimes. And so even once they've had a wake up call, they go back.
Now,
so that's where I've been more successful this time than I was ever.
Okay, good. Now I know, thinking about a coworker that they didn't get it, but their husband got it. I mean, they're a little bit older. Mm-hmm. And after the surgery, they definitely lost a lot of weight, but I feel like based on what she said is that he essentially kind of went back to his original kind of his lifestyle, in a sense where he doesn't really watch what he eats, and I think he gained a lot of it back, and just kind of like to me it's kind of sad because I mean obviously you paid for that and it's kind of a life-altering surgery. Can you go back to your original weight, I guess, in the sense like heavyweight? How does that work, I guess?
So that then goes back to math. If the calories that you're eating are empty calories,
right,
you're going to feel hungry faster and soon, you know, and more hungry. So you're going to eat more of those calories. So your body can only process, your body only burns a certain amount of calories. And so if you continue to eat empty calories and eat a lot of them and you continue no activity, the scale is going to go up.
Right.
And so that's kind of back to where, like, sometimes weight loss is a simple math problem. But what that doesn't take into account is he didn't treat the tool like a tool. Right. He treated it like the fix. He didn't find in himself that he was capable of those changes. He allowed the surgery to do the change. And just like my mom, he continued his previous lifestyle choices. And so he's gained some of the weight back.
Yeah.
I see it in the community here too. I head up a Facebook support group to coincide with the Weight Loss Center's in-person support group. And it happens, like life happens. This is not a statement of judgment. Yeah. There is never anything. I'm not you. I'm not him. I'm not mm-hmm. her. I haven't walked in their shoes. I don't know how that came to be. All I would do is just say to encourage them that no matter where they are, even if they're at a higher weight than they first were, reach back out to a nutritionist, reach back out to their local weight loss center, see if there's a way to get back on track and surround yourself with people that can encourage you to do that.
Yeah. And I say that not in a way of judgment. In a way of judgment. I think I ask in a way of concern, right?
Oh, 100%. Because it's very like it. If I hadn't had the copay paid for that next year or the tax money to cover it, mm-hmm. like that, the surgery is very expensive. You have to go through the insurance approval. My body is surgically altered. I have a surgically altered stomach and pouch. My stomach acid no longer breaks down my food. My food is processed by my mouth and then it goes straight to my intestines. That's where some of those physical reactions to different types of foods can come up.
Okay.
And so like the anesthesia, the recovery, like all of that is traumatic to your body. So if you're going to put yourself through it and not treat it like a lifestyle change, like that's on you.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think one of the reasons that, my coworker said that he was kind of failing in that aspect, I think after mm-hmm. his mom passed away and he was super close to his mom. And I think that's what really,
it's so sad. And it's a very common theme, you know, it happens again, no judgment. And that's where, at some point in time during his journey, he didn't find an alternative method for comfort. He didn't find an alternative method for dealing with grief or stress and things like that. And so he turned back to the comfort foods. He turned back to what felt right, what felt normal. And at some point in time, that okay barometer like went a little further than he probably expected it to. I'm not a fortune teller, but he's probably extremely disappointed. He probably hates it.
Yeah.
He probably feels much like a failure, you know, like
it's probably like a little vicious cycle right there because you kind of get to
and then you eat to comfort those feelings. Yep. Like it's one, you know, it's just one of those things that you got to find, you got to find a cycle breaker and be able to, overcome that, man. That's a really tough situation. Yeah. I'll be praying for him.
So what is you know, we're talking about the struggles. What is one of the biggest struggles that you had after your weight loss or your surgery itself or the whole journey itself?
So specifically, and I'm gonna be a little TMI here with you.
We love TMI.
Yeah, right after surgery, you will be constipated.
Okay.
Because you're not getting as much in, neither hydration nor food. So like if your body's like an assembly line, once you go, you know, like and things like that. So if the start of the assembly line slows down or has less input, the end of the assembly line is also going to slow down and have less output. And so that was probably like the hardest, pun intended, the hardest part for me at the very beginning, but that alleviates itself once you figure out your hydration and once you start getting some more food in your body. Physically, that was probably the hardest part. Overall, I think that the hardest part for me is A, imposter syndrome, because like, you know, who wants to hear my story when I'm not even at my thinnest right mm-hmm. now? Like I'm 20 pounds up from where I was at my thinnest, which okay. was 210. But like, that's where you can lose yourself. So I think that the hardest part for me overall is keeping a handle on my own mental health and wellness. And then also like, I'm such an extrovert and such an empath that it, like when I start to tally up the relationships that I've lost through the years over silly stuff, it really starts to affect me. And that's where like, I can get into my own vicious cycle. But like I've had, you know, people hug me and they're like, oh, you're not as comfortable to hug anymore. Really? And I'm like, what?
Like, that's just crazy.
I'm the healthiest I've been in my entire yeah. life. I am looking 40 in the face here in a couple of years, and I'm healthier now than I was when I graduated high school. And you're uh-huh. going to tell me I'm not comfortable when you hug me?
That's crazy.
But it's things like that. And then like the people that are possibly disheartened or see me, I think about others too much. So maybe that's my
right.
overall thing. The people that see me as one thing when really I'm just trying to share to help one person. Like if me oversharing, like I remember some feedback, I posted a picture less than a year after my surgery, but I had a towel wrapped around me. So more than most people are taking pictures in bikinis, I had a towel wrapped around me, and it was a huge NSV or a non-scale victory because the towel actually covered gotcha. Me up.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? And so like, I was just in my bathroom. I had my hair like in its own towel, and I took a picture yeah. of my towel and I posted it, and I lost people over it. And I, really? You know, like people came back at me and you're not being a modest woman and you're not being a good wife and this, yes. that, and the other, because I was sharing this thing that was so happy. And I'm like, wait, what? wow. I was covered. Like yeah. you couldn't see anything.
Wow.
So it's little thing. It's the little things like that that I really try to kind of push out of my mind and remember that they're not attacking me because what I shared was bad. They're attacking me because they feel attacked mm-hmm. in some way, form, or fashion because of what I shared, you know? Yeah. And so I think that's the biggest part.
So do you have, going back to TMI, how have you managed to, or have you had a lot of loose skin? Because I know loose skin is definitely mm-hmm. a big aspect of a lot of people who had a significant weight loss. How have you dealt with that, or if you had to deal with that at all?
Yep. So I am a little younger. So, and when I say younger, I mean like I use 50 as a barometer. So okay. if you're older than 50, I'm sorry, you old. If you're younger than 50, hey, you're with the kids. It's right. cool. I'll sit at the kids' table with you. But, and that's no slight on age. That's not ageism or anything like that. But there is an elasticity scientifically proven in people's skin. And so I am a little younger. So I don't have as much loose skin as maybe some of my 60-year-old counterparts that had surgery at their age,
okay.
which we have plenty of them. And that's amazing. And I love them and I applaud them for that. I have already had my arms done. So okay. we have Zoom, so like
got some muscles see. Going on. I'm a little concerned.
I've got the biceps here, so I've got scars from my elbow all the way down to my bra line on both arms.
Okay.
The amazing Dr. Joseph Michaels was the one that did that for me back in 2018, maybe 2019. No, 2018, and so maybe 2019. I don't know. Anyway. So I had the excess skin removed from my arms, and I have more plans. So I told you I have a baby. He's 18 months old. My husband and I are currently trying to have another one. So I'm not going to go and have like my abdomen or my breasts or anything like that taken care of before I have another baby.
Okay.
Because like Pablo Picasso would be really mad if he you know, finished right. his work of art, and then somebody went and stretched it out, right? So that's my, this is my homage and my respect to Dr. Michaels, is that I'm just waiting to be out of childbearing years in order to have those other surgeries. So I do have excess skin on my stomach, and excess skin on my thighs.
Okay.
And so TMI, like if I'm in a dress and I don't have like shorts on or anything underneath, if I sit down fast, my thighs rub together and make a farting noise. So let's talk about like being embarrassed in a public place and things like that. It happens.
Yeah.
So I would do my stomach and breasts at the same time. That's like a mommy makeover. That's what a lot of plastic surgeons call it. And then Dr. Michaels would actually do an entire lower body lift. So I would have a scar all the way around my, I guess bikini line, although I've never worn a bikini in my life. So I would have a scar all the way around, and he would like to wait on my thighs until I'm recovered from that. Because by pulling all of that in and taut, some of the skin from my thighs might alleviate itself through that surgery. I don't think it's going to alleviate it enough to where I'm going to be happy with it until my thighs are done. But the thighs, because that's such a large muscle group, like they have to be separate surgeries, because you can't knock out your stomach and your legs at the same time. So I've got a plan of attack for it.
Okay.
And I'm excited to do it. We're just biding our time and hoping to have a baby in the waiting.
Wow. I'm not going to lie. I think I'd be a little afraid. I guess I never really had a surgery before. So I'm just like, ugh, that sounds
kind of little... okay. You just go to sleep for a while and then everybody else does the work. It's amazing. That's like,
So what do you think it's one of the things that those success things that nobody really knows, or that you only, the one that you talked about was
non-scale victory.
Exactly.
NSV.
Yeah.
So you've got your scale victories. That's when you're seeing the pounds come down, but then those non-scale victories. Right. So it's, sitting down, it's using the non-handicap bathroom stall.
Okay.
It's, and being comfortable with that. It's not needing an extender for your seatbelt on the airplane. It's being able to, for some people, not me personally, but for some people, it's being able to wipe their own butt again.
Right.
You know, like for me, it's being able to actually work out on a regular basis, to run up and down the driveway, to run with my son when he wants to be able to sit and cuddle with my daughter, to be able to shop in a non plus size store. Like the list could go on and on and on and on and on. Mm-hmm. And so it's one of those things that like every single day you get to see how this change that you put into place has this beautiful ripple effect. Like the fact that I'm sitting in my dining room chair and my thighs aren't like on either side of my chair, you know, it's things like that. It's being able to buy a love seat instead of a couch because you feel comfortable to sit there with your husband. Like it's things like that.
Yeah. So, just a little story about myself, a quick story. I think at my heaviest, I was about 360, 370 as well.
Okay.
When I was in middle school, possibly.
See, at my biggest, I would have eaten that for lunch. So, you know, you got nothing to be ashamed of.
And then, eventually I joined football, and then I think football was in high school. Mm-hmm. And I started doing sports, and you know, I dropped especially that summer, the first summer, my freshman year, I dropped a lot of weight because it went from like, I was active, but definitely not as active as football was. And that was just a wake up call. And from there, just lost a lot of weight. And then eventually, like I started, dieting a little bit more once I started noticing that the weight wasn't really coming off. Mm-hmm. And now I'm just kind of plateaued in a little bit. I've gone up and down, but I stick around the same, about 270, 260, 270, which I still want to get down to a better level, I guess. But, you know, I think it's just a matter of time.
That's amazing. It's just a matter of time. Something that really helped me was that like focus on the water thing. So like even when I started working out, so like at the peak of my physical fitness when I was down to like 210. I lost 180 pounds in 14 months from my weight loss surgery. Right. But as soon as I could, after surgery, like, you're not supposed to do any physical activity for 8 weeks, but like, I started walking, and then I started doing like a swim class at the gym and walking. And then once the swim class got boring, I started doing a kickboxing class and couch to 5K. So then I was like jogging. Mm. And then I was doing another kickboxing class at the gym and running. So like, you build up to it. So right. I would just encourage you to like find one thing that you can focus on this week, like really focus on your hydration goals. Like, can you get over 64 ounces of water in every single day? And once you've mastered that and you have that checkbox, then focus on the next thing. Like, don't, if doing a complete overhaul is overwhelming, break it down to baby steps, you know?
Right. Right. For sure. So is there like a certain weight level or weight that, kind of either you're either approved or denied the weight loss mm-hmm. surgery?
So I'm not sure what that is. That would be up to like insurance requirements okay. and your doctor's office and things like that. For me, at 400 pounds, I was definitely approved yeah. to have the surgery done. And I'm pretty sure that even where I sit at 235, I still have hit the doctor's goals
okay.
for my weight loss. Now my goals are different. I still want to see under 200 just once. Right. I just want to see it. I know I'm going to look like a bobblehead with weird collarbones. Right. It's cool. I just want to see it. And then probably like 210 to 220 is probably where I'm going to be comfortable and stay. But again, I'm six foot.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
you're 6'4"?
I've got a little, I'm 6 foot.
Oh, this is 6'4". I'm like, whoa.
Yeah. I like to claim 6'2". The doctor's office definitely marks me around 6'1".
Okay.
But yeah, I will say 6 foot just so that
that's a little bit
it's
tall.
It's as honest as possible.
I mean, I'm 6'1" as well. So,
yeah. So
do you think overall you would recommend, that surgery for, or any particular surgery for people? Is it, you think it's worth it for people who are overweight?
I do 100%. I would just, you know, again, talk with your doctor and, mm-hmm. you know, if a weight loss surgery hasn't been part of the conversation, bring it up. If you're really struggling with weight loss and, you know, long-term weight management, just bring it up. Be like, listen, this is something I've been dealing with for X amount of years. What do you think? Is there someone else I could talk to? Right. And it's opening the conversation.
Now, before we go, I was going to ask you one question. I totally blanked out.
Out of the blue.
I know. Did you have health complication before and notice after you had, like, let's just say you were pre-diabetic or had high blood pressure. Did you have any of those?
I personally did not. So I'm one of those like weird people. I just always have like cool, even level blood pressure, like always 120 over 70. Mm-hmm. I got diagnosed with sleep apnea, but like so close to before my surgery that I really didn't do much with it. And I think that I was just tired because I was big.
Yeah.
And not because I wasn't sleeping, because I am a great sleeper. So the thing that I saw, and I'm bringing my mom back into it. So if you personally don't have any health complications, or if your insurance company is not approving you because you don't have any comorbidities, bring your family into the discussion. Be like, listen, I don't, but my mom was my mom was diabetic. My grandmother was diabetic, you know, like I was seeing the writing on the wall with my mom's high blood pressure, my mom's diabetes, things like that. And if I stayed at that weight, I might currently have those complications. Right. So if you don't yet, that's great news. And you're maybe going to catch it in time.
Right.
What insurance companies hate to do is pay out money. Mm-hmm. And the more comorbidities that people have or are likely to get, the more money the insurance companies are going to have to pay out long term. And so, you know, one of the wink, wink, nudge, nudge is my cousin Gary has diabetes, my grandmother's brother, like bring in as many pointing factors right. on that note as possible.
All right. So do you have anything else that you want to tell us, tell listeners, as far as like something that, you know, final thoughts for you?
Final thoughts.
Final thoughts.
If you're struggling, find a support system. They're there. With today's day and age, it's so much easier to find good information. Even than when I had gone through this 8 years ago. I'm actually working on a book and like a little pamphlet, you know, things to ask your weight loss surgeon before weight loss surgery. So as soon as I have those available, Ricardo, I'll make sure to pass them to you so you can distribute. And right. Yeah, you can find me on Facebook and Instagram, Chandra Unlimited.
All right. Thank you, Chandra, for joining me. And like I said, I really had a good time talking to you about this. I could talk. I had a lot of questions, but like I said, we're living on time, and I know you're.
We'll just wrap up part two. You just let me know when you're ready for part two.
There you go. Like I said, this whole conversation about weight loss. I mean, I want to say everybody, but just about a lot of everybody has some type of, you know, problem with, you know, to be honest. I just I know so many people, including myself, and like luckily I'm better now than I used to be. So I kind of know what I'm doing a little bit, but I always listen to people because, hey, especially if you've done it, you maintain it, and you've been able to do it for 8 years, and you know, I'm definitely going to listen to you So
thank you. I appreciate that. And pat yourself on the back for your own accomplishments too. Like if you've dropped any amount of weight and you've been able to maintain it for any amount of time, like that's something to be celebrated. Don't celebrate it with cake, but that's something to be celebrated.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Thank you so much. Chandra, thank you again for joining me. And one day I will be able to remember how to pronounce your name. So
take your time. It's fine.
There you go. Thank you. Thank you again. Have a good night.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of the Sober Mind Intoxicated Tongue podcast. Please be sure to take a moment to rate, review, and subscribe wherever you listen to your podcasts. We really appreciate that effort, and we'll catch you in the next episode of Sober Mind, Intoxicated Tongue.